This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. I'd like to thank our sponsors who make our podcast possible. We tape our podcast with the ongoing support of Raider and Jason Sikora, our sound engineer. Raider is a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. Iberia Bank and First Horizon, who are now one bank. Two relationship-driven banks, both leaders in the industry, have officially joined forces. The combination of Iberia Bank and First Horizon creates a leading financial services company dedicated to enriching the lives of their clients, associates, and their communities. I'd also like to thank Lafayette General Health, who has joined the Ochsner Health family and is now Ochsner Lafayette General. As one health system, Ochsner Lafayette General will provide expanded services and enhanced care from the familiar faces you already trust. Ochsner Lafayette General means more resources to help solve healthcare's toughest problems, reinvesting in our communities, and being further committed to health and wellness. Ochsner Lafayette General. Together means more. Learn more today at togethermeansmore.org. We're joined today by Ted Kurgan, CEO of Kurgan Brothers Sonic, along with the company's president, Gary Wilkerson. With over 60 Sonic locations across Central and South Louisiana, Kurgan Brothers is one of the most successful Sonic franchisees in the U.S. Recent news has shed light on the difficulties the service industry is having finding employees as we emerge from the COVID shutdown. The supply chain has been heavily impacted. Employers are competing with the government in some cases, as employees who are receiving stimulus unemployment benefits are not motivated to work. To discuss this issue, I couldn't think of two better guests than Ted and Gary. Guys, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you, Jan. We're a big fan of the show, so this is a pleasure.
Thank you. And you're here in my home, I must say. You never know what's going to happen. We've got workers outside, so if there's any noise, it's the grassroots group.
That's right.
Doing
that's
much right. needed
unsolicited,
work.
Unsolicited, but
10 years overdue. So I'm going to start with Ted. I was reading The Advocate the other day, and I was really shocked at the situation that you're in, you and your peers in the fast food industry and really the service industry. Is it really hard right now to get people to work?
Well, I would say that it's a perfect storm. So I want to be careful how I answer that, because your question was, is it hard to get people to come to work? It's hard to find people whose financial interests are best served by going to work. And so to give you a little background on that, and of course, we're all kind of aware of what's going on. But basically what happened is after the first of the year, normally people get their income tax checks. So that usually has a little effect on our business in particular, because people get, get their tax returns. So they have some, free crazy money that they can use for whatever. And then in this case, of course, the government released the stimulus checks, which, and as everyone knows, turned out to be, and I think the number was $1,400. And that was not per household, that was per person in the household.
Right.
And I know the guy that runs our in-house construction company, takes care of some of his family members, and he came in and he said he got $10,000, in the bank just showed up.
That's a
fortune. So then the other thing that happened is once people, or it seems that what happened is once people got that big amount of money, that they didn't want to go to work. B, now they have this money that they want to go and spend. And I say that because that's, if you look at the economics of what's happened, that's exactly what's happened.
Right.
And it's not just our business that's been impacted by the tight labor market. It's pretty much every single business. we have a situation right now. It's affected the supply chain.
Right.
And we might talk about this later too, but just one example is we've had a heck of a problem finding straws. And very specifically, our straws are in a container. They come from China, and they're in a container ship in the port of Long Beach. And we literally cannot get our straws out of the container ship because in Long Beach, every longshoreman that as soon as they release the stimulus checks, every one of them, and I mean every one of them, went on vacation. And it completely shut the port down. So not only our straws, but everything that's on any container ship, and it's a huge mm-hmm. port, they can't get any of those things released.
So even Sonic's in Long Beach cannot just go tap on the container and say, I'm just going to go in and get my box.
I bet they've tried. I bet they've tried.
Yeah.
And so it really has been a problem. And, you know, one of the things that really exacerbated it was when the money hit, everybody ran out, or most folks ran out and started to spend it. So no matter what business you're in, whether it's, you know, quick service restaurants like we are, and we love it, by the way, so we're not complaining. We love the fact that people got out. There was pent-up demand because everyone's been stuck in their home for a year. So, and I know I'm one of those people that got out and, you know, really enjoyed kind of life going somewhat back to normal. But what happened is when all of that happened, all these people were out spending money and everyone's sales just went through the roof. And I'm saying that because the perspective I want to give is that in reality, we do have the same number of employees we had at this time last year. So it's not just that, you know, it's new people aren't looking for a job, but business exploded so quickly in every segment that everyone, including us, really needed more employees to handle the additional business that we got. And that's another, so there's two problems. People got money, they really didn't need to work, so they took off. And not everyone, you know, but generally that's an accurate statement. And we increased our business, so we needed additional people on top of the normal number. And those are the people that we are really, we're struggling to find.
To find those additional crews. Now, Gary Wilkerson, I know your background is really heavily, you've been in the service industry for quite a while.
I have, yes.
And when I Googled this topic, I was shocked at what came up. As Ted was saying, it's not just the employees, it's the supply chain. But the fast food industry has been impacted just as much as the sit-down restaurants. There is a pent-up demand. You know, in your experience, have you ever gone through anything like this in all your years
in
the industry?
No, and of course, Ted's done this a lot longer than I have. But, you know, this really started, right now we're having some challenges with supply lines and with employees as well. But this is nothing new. We had this exact same thing a year ago. You know, last year we were trying to find hamburger meat. You know, this time we're trying to find straws, you know, and then last year, of course, you know, there was an awful lot of money that was coming out from the unemployment. You could get $600 plus the state money. And, you know, if you run that out to a year long, you could be sitting at your house and get $40,000 to not go to work.
Right.
You know, so that's where, you know, it really has it has snowballed at this point. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it seems like it's rolling and rolling and rolling. It's like, you know, everybody is having the same problems. But there are no answers at this point. Mm-hmm. But there are definitely ways that we can, you know, continue to work with people. And one of the things that we do here with Sonic is that Sonic is a little bit different from some of our other competitors. It's kind of a fun place to work.
Yeah.
I mean, now fun is not a, you know, I mean, work is a four-letter word, okay? But everybody has that, but you have to go to work. Mm-hmm. But Sonic is a good place to work. In fact, I've been in the market this week, and visiting stores, and we're getting people coming in. And I think it's because Sonic is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. We might be a little quirky compared to other people, you know, to the big boxes and, you know, the big numbers, you know, with the our competitors and things like that. And I don't think they see us coming, mm-hmm. you know, but we seem to be doing okay. Now, that being said, we have active 2,000 employees. Every single day, there's 2,000 people that are working for us. It's not the same people the next day because mm-hmm. you got different shifts and things like that. But when you look at active employees, we probably have upwards of about 3,000 employees. All of them are not working at the same time.
Right, right. So when we interviewed before, Ted, you know, our first interview with you was, gosh, it's been over a year. I remember we had the interview. We talked about how much fun
I think so,
Sonic is. And I remember you talking about how it's some of the locations people will skate. And I know you're talking about it's just a fun company. As we emerge from this COVID shutdown, which I hope we do. I mean, it's still iffy to me how we're going to come out of this with all the people on the stimulus checks and some people not getting their shots. But is the minimum wage an issue for you guys in particular? Like, I don't know where Sonic is on the spectrum, but I know there's some talk in Louisiana and other states. Is that something that's in the mix? Is that something you can talk about at this point?
Yeah, well, actually, that's a great question because the answer to that is that because of the tight labor market, the market is driving minimum wage higher faster than legislation is. So in states like Arizona mm-hmm. or California, where they've enacted a $15 an hour, minimum wage, that's not, you know, today we go to work and tomorrow you're going to get $15 an hour. That's a stair-step procedure over several years. Mm-hmm. The reality, and sometimes I don't think the politicians understand reality, but the reality is because of the tight labor market, and we're looking for the best people. We're not, mm-hmm. you know, we've never been a minimum wage, quote unquote, company. We've always gone into markets with attitude. In fact, this is part of our training is we say, go to all the competitors, find out what they pay and go mm-hmm. pay more. Because okay. we're not interested in the minimum or the average or whatever that is. We're just interested mm-hmm. in the best people. And years ago, a banker in Villeplatte said, you know, Ted, the people you pay a lot of money to, he says, they don't cause you problems. It's the lower end people yeah. that are causing you all your problems. An 80-20 rule where, mm-hmm. you know, you spend 80% of your time on 20% of your business and that's where all the problems are. When we adopted that philosophy that we just wanted the good people and we don't really care what we have to pay them, a lot of our problems went away. And then in our organization, Gary alluded that Sonic's a little different. So in our particular organization, and in most Sonics, we're very entrepreneurial and our managers are actually equity partners. So we bring in people that really have the drive and the hustle, but they just don't have the financing. Right. And we basically give them a way to get into, you know, mm-hmm. their quote unquote, their own business. And we, they have to qualify, but then we finance an equity partnership for them. And because of that, we give them a lot of autonomy. So that's kind of a long way to get to answering your question, which is, what about minimum wage? We don't control that. Each mm-hmm. individual managing partner has autonomy over his restaurant or her restaurant. So they can set that rate, that mm-hmm. wage at whatever they think it needs to be. I'm not going to discuss the philosophy of minimum wage, even though, you know, I'm not sure a universal minimum wage makes sense. Because $15 an hour in California isn't going to buy you anything.
Right.
And $15 an hour in Mississippi is actually going to put you at the median income mm-hmm. and let you afford a medium-priced house in Mississippi. So, you know, it's a good soundbite, but it doesn't mm-hmm. make sense when you really dive into it. But again, going back to your question, really the economy is driving the let's say a starting wage.
Right.
Is starting what most people consider to be a starting wage up higher and faster than the politicians are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's going to continue.
And we basically have four markets, you know, with Alexandria, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and Lafayette. And they have different characteristics as well, you know, because of the population, you know, and where the people are and things along those lines. And so we have many, many stores that are going to start somebody at $9 an hour,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on their experience or whatever it might be. And it's much, much like what Ted said is that, you know, we just do what we have to do,
right.
you know, whatever.
Right.
Say there are no cookie cutters at this point
mm-hmm.
that we're just like, okay, this is, we're only going to stay on this one line, you know, or whatever
yeah,
it might be. We don't do that.
Right.
You know, we bob and weave, you know, and we work out whether it's the hourly employees or assistant managers or the general managers as well. You know, there's we're always wanting to get good people, and different markets are mm-hmm. going to give you different opportunities.
Well, my mind is racing as y'all are talking. I'm thinking about when I started. I think the minimum wage was $1.60 an hour. I'm, you know, dating myself back.
Easy now.
I know, back in the early 70s. And I think about our law firm, you know, even if you get like part-time staff in a law firm or something, you can't really get a minimum wage type of employee because you want to train them. And you hope they'll stay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm thinking about fast food. Before we started, Ted, you were saying that there's really, in your industry, there's a high turnover of staff. Just even if they're happy, there's a turnover. And I'm thinking because you're probably hiring a lot of younger people, they're in school or they're mobile, they're going to be doing things. So all that really adds into this. And if you hire someone at, let's say, 15 or 10 or 15 an hour, and you've got other staff that are making that, then you've got that whole disgruntled, you've got to bump everybody up.
Everybody
gets
a raise.
And it may not be sustainable, you know, yeah. So I'm just, it's such a complicated thing. So I'm glad you explained you do.
Yeah, it is. And we're a very, I'm not sure how to say this, but I want to say progressive, but that's not the right word. But we're very much a moving forward type organization. So what I mean is this, you know, I kind of explained how our managers are equity partners. And then the next question would usually be, well, where do you find those people? Well, I think 78% of our managing partners started as hourly employees.
Mm-hmm.
And to give you an example, I have this managing partner, Karen Crow, Sheila Charles, and Sheila's wonderful, and I love her to death. And she started at Pinhook.
Mm-hmm.
In South Park when we opened it in 91 as a car hop. And I would guess if you would ask Sheila what at that time, you know, what she thought her career path would be, I'm guessing
mm-hmm.
maybe a cashier at Target. You know, that would be from where she came from
yeah.
and her economic background and where she went to school, that would probably have been, you know, what she would consider to be a really good, you know, career
yeah.
path. The reality is now she's owner of a restaurant and makes, you know, well in the six figures.
Oh my gosh.
So, and
deserves it.
And oh, believe
yeah.
me, yes, she deserves it, very much so, as do all our folks. So what I was trying to get to was when we hire someone, we very much talk about that and talk about, look, mm-hmm. you know, you probably just came in because, you know, either your parents are on you to go to work, or you need to buy a car, or you want to take your girlfriend or boyfriend out for dinner on Friday night or mm-hmm. go see a movie, so you need some change. We get that. But we want you to look at what the big opportunity is here.
Right.
So, and kind of folding back into what Gary just said, so what we do is when we bring somebody in, we are looking for a way to move them forward.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking actively for ways to get them more money and to give them raises. And we have a program where every time you qualify for a different position, you know, you automatically get a raise. Well, you can come to work for us and start getting a raise virtually 2 weeks later, as long as you're, you know, you're putting in the effort to do that. So we want to train people to be winners, and we want to train people to make more money. And we don't want anybody on the lower end of the spectrum. We want them at $15 an hour plus, because that's how we develop folks. And, you know, it's worked for us for 42 years. And, you know, we think we're going to stick with this deal for right now.
Yeah.
It's a good model. Yeah. It works the way it is.
And it's fun because, you know, it's really fun to work with folks that are doing better than they ever thought they could. In fact, we had a crawfish boil at my house a couple weeks ago, and I just moved into the house, you know, fairly recently, a year. It's not quite finished yet. But, you know, one of my longtime partners, you know, stood up and said, you know, I don't know anybody who deserves a house this nice more than you do. Which was, I mean, that really touched me because she didn't have to say that. And, you know, I think we have that relationship with our folks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she could have just as easily said, oh, you bum. You know, look at this great place you live. And if you paid me more money, you know.
I could have one too.
I could have one too. But she didn't. And so that was, but kind of going back to the question and what we're talking about, you know, we really don't look for minimum wage people. But again, to answer your question, I think the market is going to drive minimum wage up faster than the politicians do. So I wish the politicians would go focus on something else.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all about entrepreneurship. And I'd like to pause about another entrepreneur. One of our interviews we did back in 2017 was with Charlie Goodson, who people know is the founder of Charlie G's Restaurant. And he's a principal with Southern Hospitality Kitchens. And Ted, in particular, I thought about you when I was looking back, who can we look at? Charlie is an entrepreneur, and he started back in the 70s also. He was in college working for different people, and he decided he wanted to open his own place. And it was a different world back then. He partnered with Earl Guidry as they developed Judge Roy Bean's Saloon, who many of you may remember.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
The locale that they chose back then was the building currently occupied by Cafe Vermilionville. But back in the day, it had been owned as the Ritchie Plantation. So you can find Charlie Goodson's interview along with 200 others that we've done, including one with Ted at discoverlafayette.net. Let's take a listen. And so you were here in 67. Mm-hmm. I know just 5 years later, you were a partner with Earl Hebert, from what I understand. And I knew him as an artist.
Right.
I didn't know the history of Judge Roy Bean's. How did that come about?
I was working for Preston Guidry at the time at Pete's, the original Pete's, which was more of a college hangout.
That wasn't on, nothing
on
was
General Mouton.
Yeah, it
wasn't
on
Johnson. Where the Bulldog
Johnson.
Is now. Mm-hmm. And Earl was a good friend of Preston's. They were high school buddies. And Earl would come in after they would close the restaurant, and we became real good friends mm-hmm. there. And then I went to work for him at the Beef and Ale restaurant as a waiter.
Okay.
So I was waiting tables for Earl at the Beef and Ale, and I told him I wanted to open my own place. Mm-hmm. And so on our days off, we would drive around looking at locations.
Were you saving as you were working? Did you have it?
No.
Just, I want to do this.
I wanted to do this. In those days, it wasn't a factor of money. Unbelievably, you did not have to have a lot of money to open a business. Whereas today, that's the first consideration. Where am I going to get the money to open Judge Roy Bean's? Earl had $2,000 because he was in the business. He had a little money coming in,
which was a lot.
I borrowed $2,000. My daddy co-signed for me.
I was going to say, you went to the bank. You had to have a co-signer.
Oh, yeah. Guarantee Bank in those days. Mm-hmm. And so for $4,000, we opened a business. You know, it takes hundreds of thousands to do it today.
Right.
But, in most cases.
Uh-huh.
But in those days, we did all the work ourselves, all the painting, all the carpentry, as much electrical as we could get away with.
Welcome back to Discover Lafayette. So I want to get back to the current topic, which is the strains that the service industry is under. You know, high-end restaurants, casual sit-down, places like Sonic and others. What in the industry, like what, how are people managing? I mean, you know, maybe we shouldn't be using straws, Ted. Maybe don't they cause trouble with turtles or something?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Don't like, get this, Jan, because, you know, supposedly they kill the turtles and, you know, and our straws go into a trash can that goes into a, gets wrapped up in a plastic trash bag that goes to a landfill. I don't know how the hell those turtles are getting to the landfill. So anyway, that's just my two cents on it. But,
you know, is this a time to reassess what the industry offers? And I don't even know if you probably have thought about it and don't want to because you can't get certain things, but maybe is it a time to pivot and look at maybe people don't need straws? Maybe, I don't know, is ketchup, I'm sure there are other things along with this, ketchup and all these different condiments I know where people couldn't get them either, right?
It's just every
aspect of
it. It's a great thing to bring up. And, you know, I think that's what drives progress and innovation is, you know, Gary used the term bobbing and weaving. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we like that term and we use it all the time in our business. Mm-hmm. And Gary alluded to, a year ago, we couldn't get hamburger meat because COVID had shut down so many manufacturing plants. And on one case, one of our competitors, Wendy's, just completely ran out of meat and put on their marquees that they were out of meat. In our case, we went to the farmers and started buying the buying the meat on the hoof.
Really?
And, oh, yeah. And paying them to process them. And we got involved in a whole...
Actually,
we did that.
You? It was just us.
Individual franchisees did that because...
In Louisiana, were you able to do that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sure were.
Really?
Sure
were.
I didn't know you were going to talk about this.
We purchased...
I love that.
We had a big purchase of hamburger meat, you know, to make patties and freeze and everything else. We actually ordered 350,000 patties, you know, at one point.
Yeah.
They didn't come in at the same time. There was some logistic issues to try to get them, you know, distributed throughout all of our stores. But again, as kind of the bob and weave thing, we figured it out. You know, Ted found a source that we could get the meat. Then we ended up distributing it just like you would from a distribution center.
So and you it really was, helped local... farmers.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they were probably struggling too with the whole COVID.
So absolutely.
Wow.
Like I'm saying, these last 15 to 16 months has been every day or every week, there is a challenge of some sort, you know, and right now, you know, everybody is, the challenge that we're dealing with is our subject is staffing at this point, you know, but, you know, like I said earlier that, you know, working at Sonic is different. You know, it's like I said earlier, it's I don't want to say it's quirky, but I mean it's one of those things that it's sort of a fun place to work. Mm-hmm. And being in the stores just this week, I go visit and talk to all the kids all the time, and you know, ask them how they're doing and things like that. And I'm telling you, it was just yesterday, as a matter of fact. I was visiting stores in the Baton Rouge market, and I go in there and I'm talking to them, and I'm kind of the crazy old man.
Are
you know,
you?
I can have that, I can play that role.
You know, but they perk up when you show up.
Well, they do, and they say, hey, Mr. Gary, and all that kind of thing. But they're all smiling. Everybody's having fun. You know, it's work is a challenge, of course, but we do things a little bit different. Our menu is a little bit different from most of the people, most of our competitors, and you know, we just go with the flow. And it's like, we're not really looking in a situation of doom and gloom about staffing. Staffing is going to come back. I mean, and in about 3 weeks, all of the kids are going to be out of school looking for summer jobs. Mm-hmm. It won't be long. They're going to be looking for it. So this is, it's, we, you know, we don't look at it from a negative. We look at it as an opportunity.
Right. Have you been able to maintain your prices since you had to alternatively source things? I'm sure this is a lot more expensive than buying nationally.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because if you look at this globally, what's happened is the supply chain of everything, let's chicken. Let's just talk about chicken. I mean, chicken prices are skyrocketing. Ribeyes have gone up $3 a pound. And that's from the processing plants, just because they don't have the help. They can't produce as much. So you've got a supply and demand that's driving the prices up. What's also happening is because of all the stimulus money, people have the money to pay the higher prices. And what the economists say is going to happen quickly, and it's happening now in the grocery stores, is you're going to see those prices really go up, and they're not going to go back down because people have the dollars to pay that kind of money. In our case, we redo our menus twice a year, and it's mostly because we add some things, we take some things off, we innovate with new products. So we have twice a year where we look at our prices. So it's not like we change prices or we have a magic button where we can push that make them go higher or lower. Traditionally, if you go to our restaurants and then go to our competitors, and this is strictly philosophy and nothing else, we try to price our, even though our food's a higher quality, which I could prove that, we try to keep our pricing very competitive to a little bit lower than our competitors, just because we're trying to let our customers know that, we're sensitive to that they can spend money anywhere. And we try to make it easier for them to spend it at Sonic because in many cases we're less expensive. Again, at the same point, we use a higher quality meat. Our hamburger patties are not quarter pound. They're larger than a quarter pound patty. All things that we never talk about.
Right.
Our hot dogs are 100% beef. We don't talk about those things, but it's just what we do as a company. We don't cook before until you get to the store and place your order. We don't have food under a heat lamp. So high quality is very much part of the DNA of who we are. And pricing follows along that too. We try to be really sensitive.
So you've got flexibility in each market. I was assuming the prices might be kind of similar around the country, but it sounds like each market has a
different markets. Yeah. We try to keep in our four markets, that we're working with, we try to keep the same pricing and things like that. But you mentioned earlier about Charlie G's. Charlie G's is in the dollar business. We're in the nickel business. It's the different scale of the purchases. So we're very, very concerned of going up a nickel.
Yeah.
If we want to raise a hot dog a nickel, we talk about it for weeks, before we make any decisions. And we get all the data from our competitors but that's what we have to do to be relative in our business.
To keep those sales up where you sell thousands of units versus
100. Yeah, and you mentioned nationwide. So if you go to Sonic in San Diego, their combo is going to be $3 or $4 more than ours is.
Right.
But that's a product of land prices.
Right.
That everything is more expensive there. We made a trip to West Texas a year and a half ago to visit a friend of ours who's in Sonic there. And, because of the oil business in West Texas, their prices were significantly higher than ours were. But the wages, push that market up where they can, do that. But again, then they're paying more money for things because once one thing goes up in those markets, it just everything goes up.
How have your restaurants fared, over the past year? Everybody's still in business, all your locations?
We're very fortunate. At the beginning, when we all thought we were going to get sick and possibly die, it was really a zoo. Because also, if we had someone get sick in a restaurant, we had to close the restaurant for 2 weeks.
Did that happen?
Times. We did that a lot, especially in Metro New Orleans.
Oh,
New Orleans was such an epicenter. that you know, the health people completely freaked out, which is good. You know, they're trying to take care of all of us. So I'm okay with that. But it was really tough because all of a sudden we'd have to close the restaurant for 2 weeks and try to figure out what to do with those employees, which, and we ended up keeping them on the payroll because we didn't want to lose them. In our case, we've been really fortunate because our managing partners really stepped up to the plate during the pandemic. And also Sonic's one of the few, if not the only place where once people realize they could get out of their house a little bit, they also realize you can come to a Sonic, you can quarantine in your own car.
Yeah.
You know, you can literally order on the app so you don't even have to touch the button, even though mm-hmm. we have people sanitizing those and still do. So we were fortunate in that we were one of the places that yeah. you could still come to and get a break from being trapped in your house.
Last April, I interviewed Ruffin Rodrigue,
mm-hmm. yeah.
the late Ruffin Rodrigue, and mm-hmm. he was just devastated about the state of his end of the industry. Mm-hmm. You know, the sit-down, yep. higher end, it was just a fiasco.
They were doing curbside probably. Just
he was.
You know, and that's...
But still, his employees, you know...
Financially, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Because you can't get the volume that what you yeah. need. You're opening the restaurant and you're pushing food out the door, mm-hmm. but you're not making any money.
And that's where you guys make money is
yeah.
bringing it right. to
volume.
The car.
It's all about volume.
Volume and, yeah. and keeping it moving, yeah. you know. So what a good decision all those years ago, Tad. I mean, you started out, right, as an assistant manager.
You know, I was an unpaid trainee.
yeah.
I saw...
Unsung hero.
I saw the Sonic business. I had a friend that had gotten into it, and I saw it as a potential, you know... Well, really, I was in sales before that, and all my sales were cold calls. And the idea that a customer would actually come to you and you didn't have to go knock on his door just
willingly.
Blew my mind. I thought that was the greatest thing in the world. And, you know, and at the time when I got in Sonic was actually starting to have some problems.
Oh.
They at their peak back in the 70s, they had 1,300 restaurants nationwide. And when I got in, they were down to about 900. Mm-hmm. And what happened was, Sonic's originally from Oklahoma City and always had the managing partner philosophy, but the royalty that Sonic charged at the time was 1 penny a hamburger bag. That was it. So what happened was the entrepreneurial managers and the original guys in Sonic really, you know, operated well and made that work. As Sonic had no money for services, so they didn't have a training department, which is mm-hmm. kind of where I'm getting to. But what happened was, as Sonics grew further and further away from Oklahoma City, the ability to manage and control what was going on in the stores got less and less and less.
Right.
Because it was up to the individual operators, and it was harder to put a guy in the car and spend a week in Alabama or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, but to your point, the decision to, you know, to be a drive-in restaurant all those years ago—it's mm-hmm. just amazing, you know, what a great decision that turned out to be.
Right.
Well, when everybody else was getting out of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. your hard work though has afforded you a wonderful lifestyle and opportunities for others, including Gary. I mean,
I've been very blessed. Yeah. You know, The best move that I ever did was to move from New Orleans to Lafayette. You know, it changed my life. You know, mm-hmm. met my wife and we got married and we met at school and had my career here, and raised yeah. my daughters here and things like that. And, you know, I was in TV and I was on radio and doing a whole bunch of other different things. Got into the food business, and then the opportunity to work with Ted for these last 20 years is... It's been such a blessing. And, you know, what we do every morning, Ted and I meet every morning, every day.
You get a breakfast burrito also? I do remember that.
We should. Yeah,
good memory, yeah. Dan. Good memory.
That's great. So we, you know, I call it the morning news.
Okay.
You know, I get there a little bit earlier than Ted and check out the numbers from the night before and see what good things and the bad things. And Ted comes in and then we do the morning news, you know, and it's sort of like a TV thing or a radio thing. And we do it every morning. And we that means that we're always on the same sheet of music on what we need to focus on for either today or this week or this month.
I like that analogy, on the same sheet of music. I have to laugh and look back. I remember you, we may have met through your time at Popeyes, but the disparity between Popeyes and Sonic, to me, is just, at Popeyes, I hate to say it, but everything's good. It tastes good, but you never know quite what you're going to get. Like we always, I would never get what I ordered, you know? But it was like, well, whatever, it's pretty good
it's
stuff.
The best, you know? It's the best story about that. We worked for the Moody's. The Moody's, they're very, very successful people and everything else. They're not even in the Popeyes business now at this point. But when they were, we had a good friend. Then David Mann.
You didn't say who it was. Right. Yeah.
And he always got the wrong order.
You know, it wasn't just David, it's everybody.
Yeah, they couldn't get the order right, you know, just over and over and over again. So finally, David got to the point where he just pushed the, you know, he got up through the drive-through and he said, listen, I've got $20. Just give me how much you think it's worth. Yeah. You know, and just however much chicken you can put in there for $20, I'm good for that.
And you're going to give me what you want to anyway, so it doesn't matter what I order. It was
really funny. Yeah. Yeah, of course, David has that kind of humor.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a funny thing back then.
They get away with it.
You know, we are not a perfect business.
No,
you know, we make as many mistakes, you know, as anybody else. Everybody has the same thing, you know, no tomato or extra tomato or whatever it might be, you know, so it's not an imperfect type of a business. But what we do is we do the best that we can to reconcile it and make it better, and if we do that, not only have we saved the customer, but that customer now realizes just how important it is for us, you know, to do the right thing.
Right.
So if I can tell this story. So 20 years ago, Gary and I are on this trip that I alluded to earlier, that a TV station had taken us on. And we're just talking about business. And Gary said, well, tell me about Sonic. And, you know, I was like, yeah, I mean, we do all this. And, you know, we do this different things for our employees. You know, we give them the food half price. And I think at the time, if we got $100 mystery shop, we would give the manager a big screen TV. And what happened was it was turned into a joke because the managers were winning so many big screen TVs that they were just giving them to the crew members. So, I mean, like everybody in the store had gotten a big screen TV from us. Then we talked about the Sonic Games, which is like an Olympics where we compete and there's 3,600 Sonics and we always have somebody in the top 12. If not multiple stores in the top 12. So, and that's all based on how well your stores run. And then Sonic takes those people to wherever the convention is. It's in Nashville this year. Pays their expenses. Yeah. You know, I mean, make it a really big deal. And I said, and I went through this whole, really a litany of 30 minutes of stuff we do for the employees. And Gary said, really? He said, you know what we do in Popeyes? I said, no, what's that? He said, nothing. They come in and they get stinking, greasy, dirty. It's terrible.
A new career path opened up.
So anyway.
Oh, yeah.
But we can do that because we're Sonic. And if you fry chicken, you're limited as to what you can do. And look, again, I love Popeyes.
Oh, everybody does. Yeah,
I love Al Copeland and my wife. We used to work for Al, so you know, I'm only saying that tongue in cheek because we have our own stories.
But it is kind of funny.
It was funny. Yeah, yeah.
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 I think they've gotten better.
It's part of that.
Let's just leave it at that.
They
have, you know. You know, like I said, I was TV, then I was radio, and then I was a marketing director. And I ended up being in charge of the city club, and then and then moved on to I guess maybe my roots with you know, fast food, and it's been very, very blessed for so many years.
I have a question for Ted. You know, as we wind down, I want you to get in a couple of personal thoughts. But have you ever worked like to fry the fries, or do they put you in charge of tater tots? Like, do you get to go do some of these jobs?
No, are you kidding? They see me coming, they lock the door. They go, do not let that man in. He is going to so screw up the lunch run. So I'm blessed that God has let me know what my limitations are. But I got to tell you, we closed the Jennings Sonic about this time last year and completely remodeled it. And when we opened, we were just, you know, it was crazy. And I made hot dogs for a week.
You did?
Yeah. I mean, it was just, that happened to be the place I walked into when and we were so busy, I couldn't move.
And you could manage that.
So, yeah, I can do a hot dog, you know, yeah.
The
fryers now, man, you got all kinds of buttons going off.
And, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
I know my limitations. I know how to do everything. But there's the kids that are working on the line and in the kitchen, they're so fast and they're so good. You know, you got to get out of their way, you know, because they're going to mess up the operations. Yeah. What I usually do is I just fill the ice bin, you know, because they always need that. You know, it's like, and I'm not going to be in their way.
Right.
And so at least it helps them a little bit. But yeah.
Now that brings up another memory. Are y'all still selling that wonderful ice to the public?
Yes, ma'am.
We do.
5 pounds.
We have your bag ready. It's in the freezer.
It's the best ice.
It's the best. Yes. And it's amazing how many people, you know, come to buy a bag of ice. Mm-hmm. I can promise you they're not buying any ice at Burger King. You know,
the best. It's crunchy and it's just cut just right. So.
Yeah, I do want to say one final thing about hiring employees. I think a lot of it is how you approach things and how you your mention of straws and turtles and, you know, that you do have to innovate. So once we, about 2 weeks into this employee situation, where we realized we were up 50% over last year and just didn't have that many people, is we went to the managers and said, look, you know, it's you know, here's what we're going to do. You know, I need everybody's ideas. So we want everybody to get creative, get out there, you know, do your thing, and send us what your ideas are. And we're going to have a contest. And so we put up $5,000.
Oh, man.
And so the manager that came up with because it's still going on, with the very best idea, and this will be voted on by all the other managing partners that we have, whoever has the most creative and successful idea to bring people on will win the $5,000. So it goes back to your thoughts about innovation. Yeah, that's what you got to do. You got to come up with. And you know, at the end of the day, and philosophically, this is the way we try to run our restaurants, but we think that our employees will never treat our customers better than we treat our employees. And to a big point, we think, we look at the employees, our employees, or team members, whatever you call them, as our customers. So our challenge every day is to find a way to treat them with love. You know, we're all children of God and deserve to be treated that way. And we try to treat them with love and with respect and with appropriate boundaries, of course. And that's how we think we do well, because then they mirror that, whether they know they're doing it or not, we feel that they mirror that with our customers out on the lot. So the way we handle our employees, and it all falls back into recruiting and everything else, we think is really a mirror of how they're going to treat our customers. God, without the customers, you know, I know it sounds, you know, canned, but somebody made a comment at the gym I was working out the other day. Her name's Nicole, and my trainer had used the wrong name for a Sonic Blast. And she is my competitor's name for a similar product. And she jumped on him, you know, right away. But anyway, so it's interesting how when we do that, we feel like even the customer becomes part of our team.
Yeah, it really is a circle. How you treat people, it does come back.
Yes.
You know, especially the good ways you can treat people. So
yes.
Any other thoughts you guys want to share? Did we talk about what you wanted to discuss?
We covered a lot.
Yeah.
I think that good days are ahead.
Good.
You know, for us. I think all of this is going to just kind of come back together sooner or later. you know, hopefully sooner, you know, whether it's staffing or whether it's our supply lines or things like that, we're going to be fine, you know, and I think we will thrive from because of the past 15 months or so that we've been dealing with. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, 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 very excited about what the future looks like.
Good.
I think the only other thing I'd like to say is really is to compliment you. I think you have done and do a tremendous amount of things for the community. You you did a lot of work for, you know, the north part of Lafayette. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people recognize, you know, how impactful that was in helping businesses. But we watch stuff like that because we also try to, you know, we do the Christmas parade every year. Mm-hmm. Where Gary does, you know, give credit where credit's due. But anyway, I just wanted to say thanks for all
Thank
that you do for the
yep,
community.
Sure thing.
And people do notice, and we appreciate you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure doing this podcast because we get to hear the people behind the businesses or mm-hmm. the artists that we know, but we don't really know. So thank you both for thank you for your kind words and for both of you for being here today. Again, we want to thank Ted Kurgan, CEO of Kurgan Brothers, along with the president, Gary Wilkerson. And I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Iberi Bank, which is now a part of First Horizon, and Ochsner Lafayette General. They've been very supportive the last few years. And of course, Raider Solutions and the team at Raider, in particular, Chris Raider, my buddy, and Jason Sikora, which takes this tape and mixes it for us. We couldn't do this without him. Thank you for listening. Please think about subscribing to the podcast. It helps us spread the word, and you can share these wonderful interviews with others. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift. Thank you.